D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geekster's episode 130. This is the show where we talk about all things geekies and, yes, sometimes even pacemakers. My name is Martin Obando. I'm one of the hosts. Before I introduce my other hosts, I want to thank Repair Tech Solutions for their support of the Podnuts Network. They have a product called TechSuite. It's the ultimate computer repair toolkit. It downloads, installs, maintains, and automates over 300 commonly used repair utilities. And you can even add your own to that. For more information, go ahead and check out the podnuts.com website. Up in the top, there's a banner there. You can just click on that. It takes you right to the site. So we want to thank them for helping out in the Podnuts Network. But so tonight, we have Tim, Mitch, and a guest. I'm going to start with the guest. We never start with the guest, but I'm going to start with him today. You guys may have heard his voice. He's got a famous voice. I don't know. When I hear his voice, I know exactly who I'm talking to. Guys, it's Mark Cockrell from Element OP and Everyday Linux. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Greetings, geeks far and wide. I think famous is a very liberal use of the word to refer to me. There are tens of people throughout the world who know who I am.
It's not just famous. It's infamous.
I'm so famous, I'm infamous.
Well, Scott, thanks for coming on the show. And you, I mean, you're a trifecta of turbulence just like we are.
Sure. I don't know what that means, but I'm going to go with it.
I don't mean me neither. I just had to come up with something after trifecta, and turbulence was the first word that popped into my head. So
did you just say I'm gassy? Is that what where you went with that?
Pardon me?
Did you just call me gassy? Is that what happened?
No. I didn't call you gassy. See,
called me a windbag. That's what happened.
Like a whirlwind of entertainment and joy and knowledge. That's where I was going with it.
Okay.
Well, I only say that because on Element OP and Everyday Linux, there's you, there's Chris, and there's Seth. And so
that's
there's three of you, there's three of us. Anyways, if you give me about 5 minutes, I'll draw a picture.
Okay.
All right.
Will there be turbulence in the picture?
There, like a NATO of turbulence.
And you do have that capabilities here in Google.
A shark NATO. And ladies and gentlemen, that's Mitch. Hey, Mitch, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? And
I'm doing
welcome,
well.
Mark, and hello, Tim.
Hey, man.
Speaking of Tim,
glad to be a part of the trifecta of turmoil.
God, you're so intelligent. I can't beat that kind of
that's a better one. Turmoil. Oh, man. All right. So we introduced Mark. And Mark, so you're on a podcast, and that's where I know you from. But I know you also work in something that. So you have a normal job, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday job.
Would that it were 9 to 5. That would be awesome. But it's really more like 7 to 11:30 or something like that, like most people do. The myth of the 40-hour work week. I work in the Atlanta, Georgia area. I work for a hospital system doing electronic medical records. That's what pays the bills, and Element OP Productions is my podcast network, and that's what I do for fun. Someday, I hope to reverse that equation.
You hope to work in hospitals for fun?
Yes. Because it is fun.
It is. I'm just asking you.
Wow, he's like a wind up toy. You just pull the string and he goes. It's awesome.
You know what? I just didn't see that coming at all. This is what we do. This is for fun. And, you know, you always want to make your hobby your job, and he's right. And so we all want to do that. I'm sorry, I just did not see that coming at all. Is it still fun, Mark? I mean, what you do? Like, at some point there was something about it that drew you to it. I mean, it's not pure drudgery to you, is it?
It depends on what time of the year you ask me that.
Okay, all right.
Like most jobs, you know, they're cycles. And right now I'm in a cycle of suck. And that's just, you know, it's the way it is. But I know that will pass. I enjoy troubleshooting. I enjoy problem solving. And computers are great for that because there will always be problems to solve.
The alliteration today is fantastic.
Sure is.
Cycle of suck.
maybe that should be the title. Well, I only ask because I know that you've also worked in, when I started listening to Everyday Linux, you were at the current time, I think you may have been working in education. And I have a big background in working in education. And then my wife, I also do some electronic medical records for some veterinary hospitals that I work for. My wife works for the Kaiser system, and so she uses electronic medical recording in all the time. And so there's keywords that you put out there that every now and then I'll go, oh, I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, for 15 years, I was a network administrator for a small public school in rural Texas, and that is the epitome of problem solving. I was given, you know, a tiny budget and large expectations, and I enjoyed doing it, but public ed is under attack right now from a lot of different fronts, and budgets were being cut, and I was just a rat that jumped off the sinking ship. And, you know, where there's... I don't know how political you guys get on this show, but there are political things happening that make healthcare the place to go for the next 10 or 12 years. So that's where I chose to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I worked in Oregon. We have educational service districts. So they're above the school districts as far as support goes. They were initially started for birth to kindergarten special needs students, but now they cover everything from tech support to help desk to, you know, and so I was on the server team and the desktop team. So we covered, you know, 1200 computers, 120 servers, covering a huge range, all the top Northern Oregon spots. So I've worked there. I'm now a systems and network administrator for a private school within my company. So I understand education.
I'm not sure anybody understands education, but I'm going to go with it.
I feel your pain. I feel your cycle of suck.
Yeah, my wife was a kindergarten teacher, pre-K actually, for most of her career for 21 years. And due to budget cuts, her job was replaced by a kid straight out of college that they could pay half as much. So, you know, it's just, it is what it is. Life changes. And so now I'm in Atlanta, dyed-in-the-wool Cowboys fan in the home of the Falcons.
Nice. I'm a Niners fan, so.
Oh, so I'm contractually obligated to hate you.
Well, and ditto here. So.
You're a jerk, Martin. Okay, now we got that out of the way.
Yeah. I also like, my Montana can kick your guys' butt. Just give him a moment. He's got to get there. Little slow.
Yeah, we're still trotting out Troy Aikman, who's been retired and on the couch for a decade. We keep saying, if only Troy would come back, there would be hope.
So, guys, what have you guys been up to this week? Anything
I worked new? On an ancient P4 Dell 8300.
Wow.
And this guy knows zero back computers, zero. And I cleaned it up, but the hard drive, the hard drive is failing when I run C tools and Crystal Disk, but it's working all right. So, and it's got XP, of course. So I said, you know, this is really old. I mean, it's working pretty well now. I got it cleaned up good. So it's, you know, if you want to get a hard drive or you just want to get it like it is, say it's only, you know, just use it like it is and wait till it dies. But he doesn't know how to, he had a wireless USB adapter on there, software. I took it off because I didn't think he was going to use it, but he wants to use it because his mother gave him this. And so I'm trying to walk him in how to reinstall it. I put it on a CD for him, and he can't figure that out. So but now I'm putting him on a USB stick, so see if he can figure that out. But I don't see any hope.
What were the symptoms, Mitch? Was it you get blue
screen? It was infected. Yeah, actually, that was one of the things, but it was a bad NVIDIA driver. Yeah, it was one of the things, plus some infections going on. I got it clean, so it's running pretty good for what it is. But he doesn't know how to do anything.
I mean, the hard.
He's never had a computer before. But the hard drive, it was. No, I mean, it wasn't showing any symptoms. It was just failing when I ran these.
Oh, it didn't even come in for that.
No, he. I think he tried to hook it up, and it blew screen immediately. And it was like, do you remember the NVIDIA FX 5200 cards? The HP card. Yeah, it was, and I recognized because I had that same problem too on one of my. I had a couple of those cards, and that will tell you it's the NVIDIA. It gives you the initials of the NVIDIA, so I recognized it right away. It just had a bad driver. Yeah,
but you're still. I mean, it's a Windows XP machine.
Yeah, and you know, I told him all about the involved. We're just probably not going to do much with it. You know, so see what he's going to do with it. I mean, I want to. You know, he's got DSL, but he was going to hook it up. You know, with his phone line as an Ethernet cable. So, you know, that's how much he knows. You know, so he thought he had an Ethernet cable. That's the phone line, right? No,
Wow.
So. Yeah. Well, I ran into a Windows XP this week. This is still the center that they got the free HPs that were loaded with the Dell. So,
right.
So I had Mark. I was this company I take care of. They were given some computers, and they were HP computers, but they were loaded with the Dell OEM CDs. and then they bought Office through Dell, and then had to pay Dell tech support to get Office installed. And then I went down, and this is a location that's 6.5 hours south by car. I went down to work on some projects down there, stopped in, was going to look at their stuff. Their Windows was 3 days away from being, you know, it was giving you the, hey, you have only so many days left to register Windows, because it wasn't a valid copy, even though they had stickers on the stuff. So I said, well, let me take them back. I'll wipe them. I wiped them, put Windows back on them, used the key, went to go put Office back on them, which was a 5-pack through Office 365. Dell had no recollection of the order. I spent 3 hours with Microsoft trying to get them to do anything. We ended up buying a new copy and getting everything back on. So now they're back up and running, right? And I get a call earlier in the day saying, I can't get online. Like, well, I know you can get online because I can see the four computers. No. This other computer by the window. I'm like, what computer by the window? Oh, well, this Windows XP, this other computer, when it won't take my email password. Like, is that Windows XP computer still hooked up? Yeah. Okay, we can't hook that up. Well, what am I going to do about my email? Well, your email has been removed from the POP account to now hosted Exchange, so that's not going to work. We need to go through Outlook. Well, we have Outlook Express. All right. So we ended up kind of going around and around for a bit because he wants to use it, but it's Windows XP, but they were given four new computers, which I want them to use those so we can get rid of the Windows XP. And it kind of ended with him saying, well, we'll have to think about it. I'm like, I was told by the director, this isn't something we're going to think about. This is a change we need to make. So we're going to still move forward with that and, you know, see what happens.
Yeah. That's what a mess, man. That's been crazy. You know, speaking of, audio, I was, I tell you, I've been playing around with this Avast instead of installing, Security Essentials, just for whatever reason, I threw on this Avast because it reminded me of this because, you know, they didn't Avast make some commitment to continue to support XP, you know, at least for a while. I've always been, you know, fan is the word, but I mean, I've always considered Avast, you know, a good, the free version, a good option, one I could recommend, you know, as text, it's one of those that's years and years and years has always been, you know, another option. And but I'm always intrigued by it because I install it and it's, I recommend it with Security Essentials. It's like, well, you can install Security Essentials or you can install it with Avast. It's kind of like, these are two. But I tell you what, both of those two programs could not be more different, you know, under the hood. It's install Security Essentials because you just want something that's going to work there and you're not going to be harassed by it. This Avast is a trip.
Yeah,
it's the complete opposite.
It does harass you now.
And you know what? A lot of those, it does. Well, that's, you know, out of the box, it's set up to give all these, a lot of information, the pop-up messages and that. But, you've just been updated. It's like, just shut up. Stop doing that. But, and you can turn all that stuff off. It's amazing once you start clicking through it, how much stuff is in here. And as a tech, I'm really enjoying it, and I haven't got into it too much, but I thought of Martin, I thought of you immediately, buddy, because, I mean, there's, you can open up stats, global stats, and there's real-time data, and there's a thing that's scrolling, and it's just showing all these loops on a graph, and all these, things popping up constantly. It's like this information of stuff is finding, it, not on my computer, but just global. It's, I think that is so cool, but there's all kinds of features in this. You know, you can set up
remote software in there.
There's that. Yeah, I'm seeing the thing where if you have Avast installed on a tablet or a phone that it has a built-in to this where you can gain some kind of access to it somehow. I haven't tried it yet, but I tried it. I saw you can set up. Oh my gosh. Up technology. This is stupid.
Now, can you turn off the NAG to upgrade the programs to the paid?
I don't know. I haven't tried that yet. I think the one that really intrigued me was that, like a lot like paid software that you'd expect. You know, you could set up an email address, and if it's finding things, it can send you alerts or an email. that's just feature after feature after feature in this. And I'm not sure if, you know, maybe some of this isn't available that you actually have to, you know, register or get a
paid version. Yeah, for the paid version.
But right. I'm just really intrigued by this, that with all the, you know, with it's in stark contrast to the Security Essentials that, you know, the big sell to me is that you just install it and it just sits there and that's it. That this, there's just so much involved with the Avast.
One of my best features, Tim, I think that one of the best features is it gives you a boot time scan. And I don't know if there's any other antivirus that does that before Windows actually starts.
Okay, sure. Which is,
I love that.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, that's where a lot of the stuff takes, you know, that's where a lot of the problems take place.
Right. No, all of that is available in the free one, and it does have you register it just so they have it on file. It's good for a year, and then after a year, they want you to re-register it, right, which is basically just give them your name again. Now, and you can go on with saying something like, you know, it just has to match the algorithm, whether it's, you know, one@two.com or me@mine.com. You don't have to specifically give them your name because they don't, it's, they will send you stuff, but you don't have to get this stuff. And
I always give my email address, and I don't know if I give them the name, but I never gotten any harassment.
Right.
Never.
Right. That is the one thing is that, you know, it is a legitimate company, and by, you know, giving them your email address, it seems to be, you know, they're not going to harass you very much. Or even if they do, there's probably a way to get off their list by just saying, hey, get me off your list, as opposed to fighting with another company to get off their list. But yes, it does. It is very much full featured, and I've used it. You know, I think we've all used it in the free environment, and I've deployed it in a corporate environment being managed by a centralized server.
I'm enjoying it. I do every time. About once a year, I'll install on something and just kind of tinker with it and see what they've done.
See, I put it on that machine I was just talking about, that P4, mm-hmm, but I didn't turn things off. I didn't drill in there because every time you boot it back up, it comes with this splash screen. You wouldn't install a Dropbox. And I say no, continue. But I forgot to disable that.
I did have to uninstall it from a very old Celeron laptop because it didn't matter. I turned off, you know, the scanning, the features, the, you know, all the extra stuff, and it was just bogging down the system so bad that I had to take it off. And it's a Windows XP box, and the gentleman has not yet gotten back in touch with me because I told his wife, I've sent him a couple emails and called and left messages on the phone saying, you have a Windows XP box, it's not being monitored or secured anymore, and you're not running with an antivirus. Because I kind of expected him to, he was out flying the day that I did this. I was expecting to hear from him that night, and I haven't heard from him yet, and it's been about a month.
You didn't replace it,
Avast? I don't know what to replace it with. It's a Windows XP box.
Elvira.
I guess so, but his computer, it was running so slow.
It was too slow, yeah.
So,
pro tip, for those customers that just won't switch, put a Avast on.
Well, that was, like, it's too heavy.
Yeah. So, I'm waiting to get back hold of him and see what we can do. Maybe I'll see about putting the managed services that I provide out and see if that makes any difference, if it runs more minimalistic than Avast will. At least on his computer.
No, I mean, you want him to change. You want him to upgrade. You want new computers. So just leave the Avast on.
Well, of course. I would like him to get a new computer.
So we'll just leave the Avast on.
No, better yet, put Norton's on.
Norton.
I had some technical difficulties there. I didn't hear a lot of your conversation, but I assume you're still on Windows XP. I just want to point out this point. I am using Windows XP right now as we do this show.
Really?
And you didn't hear a lot of what we were talking about?
I was just going to say, we could tell.
Yeah. I don't, I used only for recording podcasts, and it's not connected to the network, and it's not my daily driver in any way. Yeah. But yes, I'm using it.
And there's nothing, and so that's there's no problem with that, right? 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 There's no problem with that at all. I mean, if it's never connected to the internet, if it's not sharing, you know, you have flash drives going, if it's isolated, all there, all by itself, you know, Windows 98, what's the problem?
Yeah, because a lot of people get stuck in that situation where they've got hardware that is XP specific, mm-hmm, you know, and I understand Microsoft has to move people along at some point in the line, but if you can't afford to move with them, you got what you got. And so a lot of enterprises are stuck in that situation.
Right, exactly.
It's like where I work for my company, we might have 20 or so PCs in a building. Maybe three or four have 7. All the others have XP still.
Well, I'm trying to get this gentleman to move forward. He has admitted to me multiple times when he brings his computer to me and it's infected. He's like, yeah, there's sites that I go to that I probably shouldn't go to that I keep getting infected. I'm like, you need to get off Windows XP.
So, or just stop being stupid. I mean, well, you can't really say that to a client, right? But the solution to your problem is to stop being stupid.
It's like, I'll clean it.
I need the sample.
Gloves on. Okay, gloves on, scene safe.
A new OS isn't going to take care of that, though.
Well, no, but at least it's better than...
Yeah.
I mean, at least with a new OS, we could run, you know, it'll have the system resources, because if it's going to be a new computer, to run Avast or Security Essentials or, you know, a modern antivirus solution rather than taking, you know, 60% of the system resources just to run the antivirus product, not including everything else that needs to be ran to make it a daily use laptop.
I don't know why it's run, but I just clicked on it. It said I was a winner. I clicked on it.
Well, you won.
On second thought, don't. I mean, you want stupid customers, right? So, you know,
in a way.
No, I'll take sitting at home and visiting with a family over a stupid customer. Then the for a certain time, and then the family. It's like, man, if I only had a stupid customer right now.
There's no stupid customer.
No, there's not.
Just uneducated.
Oh, my.
Has anybody else worked on anything?
I was trying to think. I have, but I finalized my server switch. So for my hosting. And in the process of doing that, I was blacklisted by Hotmail. Microsoft product.
Oh my god.
And oh my. So this has been a big problem because Microsoft owns Hotmail, Live, Outlook, MSN, and they use, and I just was talking with the Hotmail people yesterday, the Microsoft people, they actually use the semantic security guard or semantic something. So if I was blocked by Symantec. And then Microsoft subscribes to them, and therefore I was getting blocked. So I had all of these customers emailing me saying, I can email these three people, and then I email this Hotmail person, and my message comes back, and it tells me I'm blocked. And so I had to go, first off, quickly figure out what I'm going to do. I need to find something to do this. And I found a site called, and I had talked to these people at OLF, and maybe, I'm not sure if I brought this up last week. It's called SendGrind, SendGrid, SendGrid. And this is a free product, but it's a free SMTP out for you to use for your clients. So if you need a free SMTP out, whether it's for a copier, maybe it's a scanner fax, maybe it's, you need something, you can go here. They have a free one. They've got they look like they're page wigged out, but they have a free one. They've got one where it's 10 cents for 1,000 emails, and then you start going up into the bronze plan, the silver plan. Their silver plan, it's $80 a month, but you do get a dedicated IP, so that could be a bonus there. So I moved people who were having issues over to SendGrid to use as an SMTP out, and that resolved the issue until I was able to get a hold of Microsoft, because they make you fill out this form that kind of resembles like you're buying a car, because they want to know everything about everything. Then you present it to them and then they say yes. But I was pleasantly surprised that once I filled the form out, it only took about 4 hours for them to respond back to me and get things moving. So I'm in the process of getting off their blacklist. But if you need a email delivery program, sendgrid.com.
Do they stick ads in your outgoing mail?
It does not.
Not even a footer? Nothing?
Nope. Nothing. And you can get a free, so the free plan is 200 emails a day. The next plan up is 10 cents per 1,000. And then it's.
Is this per client, per each client?
No, as a whole. So if I've deployed this out to 5 clients and 5 clients send, you know, 10 emails a day, well, there's 50, you know. And so the other day, I think I peaked at 100, because you can go and you can look at your stuff, you know, your statistics. But they want to sell you right off the bat. They want to sell you the silver plan because they're like, hey, $80 a month. Well, what they really push for is the SendGrid is they have this, it's called transactional emailing. But what they do is they do marketing emailing. That's really kind of their niche, is if you need a way to, you know, you want to send out to 40,000 people a day, but you don't want to use it on yours because you're going to get blacklisted or blocked or Comcast won't allow it from, you know, whatever. Now you pay them and you send it out through them, and then they take the hit because you're going to you know, you're going to get a dedicated IP through them, and then they've probably already messed with the SPF and the all those records.
Now, these the machines are using Outlook or Live, Windows Live. What client are they using for the email?
It didn't matter. I had clients using Apple products emailing out. I had clients using Outlook. I had clients using Webmail. It was being bounced back because the recipient they were sending it to was using Outlook.
Did you have to, well, with this new thing, did you have to actually configure it with this, whatever?
Yes.
The SMT part, yeah.
Yeah, I had to go in and contact them, and we had to change the SMTP out to the ports and stuff like that. And then, but so far, no issues.
Are you guys familiar with the Mercury Mail server?
Mm-mm.
It's been around for a Pegasus Mail client, been around forever. The same guy did that. It's pmail.com is the website. I use that. It's a fully functional RFC compliant server that's available for free, runs on Windows or NT servers, if you want to go that far back. I mean, not NT, but Novell servers, NetWare. Oh. But the Windows version is fully functional. It's small. It doesn't take up a lot of resources, and it's great for just that sort of thing. In fact, when I was, before I transitioned the school I worked for to Google Apps, it was the mail server, and it was processing mail for 700 users, all day, every day on a little XP machine back in the day. And it was great. So it's, you know, if you know your way around mail servers, you can set this up fairly easily without a lot of fuss. If you don't know anything, then of course SendGrid, I think, is going to be a great way to go. But if you're interested in hosting your own mail and all that entails, check out Mercury Mail.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. But that's definitely for in-house. Right. But what was happening with this one is that since I do web hosting, unfortunately, I got blacklisted by one client, and then all my clients suffered. So, and I'm in the process of making that better. I've increased my server account so that way I can work on trying to maybe provide different IP addresses for servers and kind of keep people a little separate.
Yeah, if you were in this case, though, I guess you could have assigned a separate outbound IP address unless the range was blocked to your local server. Did you try that?
No, I did not, because it was just one of those, I need to figure this out fast, and so just this...
Do it now, this, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know... Because people, you know, they would be sending out, you know, 30 emails, say, and 10 of them would bounce back. And they're like, I don't know what happened. And I look, Outlook, Hotmail, live. And I'm like, oh, they're... And sure enough, when, like I said, I contacted them and they said, yeah, we see that your IP address was blocked. We've unblocked it. So this is great for things like... So I also have, in a lot of my sites, I have Windows Software Update services. And they need... And I, you know, they need to send out... Those reports need to come to me. Well, I can throw my SendGrid information in there rather than using my Comcast account or just you know, something else, you know, from them, because maybe they're using POP from another, you know, Hotmail or something like that. I can, you know, this is a great way that I can have a SMTP service that Obando Computing can use for you know, notifications without having to rely on anybody else. So that's kind of what I did this week.
Throw that in an automated script, and it's always good.
Yeah, and it's free, which I was. Because I actually called them and said, you know, wanted to know
what's the catch?
Yeah, exactly. What's the catch? It's free, which is great, but am I going to get, you know, I actually had people test me, because Mark, your question was, do they supply ads? That was my first thought, is we're going to get an ad, you know, and I was kind of ready to just kind of bite the bullet and my company pay for the cost of making sure that email goes out correctly for my clients. And they said, nope. No ads, nothing. It's just that, you know, there is a chance that you could get on a spam list and then you end up being blocked on our site too. And that's, you know, we can't do anything about it, because you're going to get, you know, you get the free version, so you get what you get. But if you'd like to buy the $80 version, then we can help you out a lot more. And I'm like, yeah, that's $80 a month though. And it's things like, you know, oh, then I can send out 10,000 emails a day. I'm like, I don't have 10,000. I don't know 10,000 people.
So. Well, you have 10,000 listeners to this podcast, right?
In this episode, we just might.
9,998. So I need two more people to start listening.
Grandma, come here.
Yeah.
Let me get my dog.
I got to pull her away from the WoW computer.
Minecraft.
There's a computer out there called the WoW computer. And remember you know the phones with the big buttons?
Or the remote controls with the giant buttons.
Right. There's a computer out there that actually runs on Linux, and it's called the WoW computer. It's called My WoW Computer, and it's a WoW computer for seniors. And it's an all-in-one PC. Not a touchscreen. Oh, it is a touchscreen, so it's kind of a stand-up computer, but it's running Linux in the background. And how we came to find this computer is that I think, Tim, you were called out. You worked on one, and I think it's running Ubuntu in the background, and it's on sale right now for $1,079. It's normally $1,299, and it's
I'm watching the YouTube video for it. I love the fact that the furniture in the room looks like it's something that an 80-year-old woman would have. You know, the old white leather couch and oak coffee table.
If I see nothing wrong with it.
If you ever work on a WoW computer, make sure to take your shoes off and ask before sitting on the Davenport.
Yeah, it'll be time for me to use that, like, probably in a few months.
A few months.
So it's like an iMac with a keyboard.
Oldest one here.
It was actually, as far as these things that are like, hey, let's cater to, technology to cater into the elderly market, I felt that this was probably one of the better products out there. I was just a little surprised when I showed up, because a couple times in the past that I've been there, she had a computer I was familiar with. I was used to her calling me with questions, and then to show up and find this extremely alien thing, I was surprised. I felt like it was, executed fairly well. I was just kind of taken aback. I'm like, what on earth is this thing? Wow, computer.
And it looks like they totally ripped off the iMac.
Oh yeah. Well, it's a cross between the iMac and web TV or the web. Or what's the web?
Yeah, it did feel like that a lot.
Gosh, what was the, remember the web?
Yeah, it was something.
Web computer.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt, was it web TV?
Something like that.
My aunt had one.
Oh yeah.
And yeah,
it's like using smart apps today to get on YouTube.
I mean, the interface looks like Windows 8, frankly. There's great big buttons on the home screen. Isn't that Microsoft is going for the 80-year-old market, apparently?
I think so. Well, not until, see, now, Tim, here you go. Microsoft's set to unveil Windows 9 September 30th.
When?
September 30th? Yes.
Oh, people, well, and October 1st, they're introducing 9.1.
It's a $500 upgrade.
So The Verge is reporting that September 30th, they're going to have a press release to talk about Windows 9. It's going to look, apparently it's supposed to look better, do something. I think they're going to bring back the start menu. I think they're going to get rid of the Metro UI interface. Here's the thing, though. The code name for this one, and Microsoft, it has a code name for all their products.
Threshold.
Code name Threshold. So I thought, let me look up Threshold. Let me see what the definition of Threshold is. And it says, the magnitude or intensity that must be executed for a certain reaction, phenomenon, result, or condition to occur or to be manifested.
Sure.
So it's on the verge of being a real thing. It's right there.
Right. Yeah. It's 9 is the threshold from Windows 8.
Well, every other Microsoft OS is a success, right?
Well, so far. I mean, Bob didn't do so well.
I feel a little better about whatever it is they're doing moving forward, only because there's been a change of people, there's been a change in structure, and so I've always said I thought Windows 8 was great. Maybe Windows 9 would be the one that's both great and people should use.
So it's a great operating system over there.
Right. I always thought it was great. I always liked what they were going for. I just don't think people should use it. Having said that, I'm willing to I'm this close to reexamining that, because there's been a lot of changes with 8.1.
So 8.1, it will boot up to the desktop instead of the
Mac. And it took about this long for all of the weirdness of Vista to kind of shake out. And so, I understand that they're when they go for these big changes, that there is a period of time where it takes to kind of like. So I have a machine here. I'm about to reinstall it on and try it out. But there's been a lot of change in the people there, as far as, so that can only bode well for Windows 9. I don't know if I like Threshold. It's
just a code name. You're not supposed to know about it.
I don't know. It sounds kind of ominous. I mean, pressure point or
code name pressure point.
Yeah, last. It's like code name last stab.
Mark, are you guys using Windows 8 or any experience with Windows 8?
I have Windows 8 on one laptop at my house. At my work, it is still considered the great unknown. It's fine. once you put Start 8 on it and make it act like Windows 7, it's great.
And I think that's been the consensus of us here, is that when it first came out, we were kind of like, this is not going to fly very well. And I think one of the issues that we've definitely talked about multiple times is that it would have been nice if they separated the basically the desktop environment between, you know, whether it's going to be a tablet touchscreen or whether it's going to be a desktop laptop or in a laptop that has touchscreen, give you the choice. But the wide sweeping brush of you get both desktop environments on every machine, you know, like love it or hate it, has never, that's, you know, I think the operating system itself, I've used it. I don't have a Windows 8 machine myself. I've supported them. I think it's very fast. I think it works well. I just, the desktop environment was poorly implemented, and I think that caused a lot of initial frustrations from the beginning.
Windows 8 was all the spousal approval headaches of Linux, but with the cost of Windows, it was really the perfect OS.
On the nose.
This is an interface I hate, but I'm paying for it, so it's okay. You know, if I move to Linux and the interface I hate, well, it's free, so we can't go with that. But as long as you paid money for it, we're good.
That's the spousal approval.
Yeah. No, I gave my wife a Windows 8 laptop for her birthday, and she hated me for it. How dare you do this to me?
I ruined Christmas one.
Yeah. Here, honey, I got you a new laptop. You evil man, you. That's not the response you're looking for. You know, when we're going, you know, at Microsoft shareholder meetings, maybe we should look for a different response for, here, honey, I got you a new laptop.
What was she running?
Windows 7.
So she just gave it back to you and said, I'm going to keep my Windows 7 box?
No, she gave it back to me and said, make this look like Windows. So I did. And now it's fine.
I think it's funny that and that was some of the problem that early on was that it was funny because you mentioned that you said make it look like Windows.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to what Windows should look like, and then Windows 8 comes out, which is still a Windows product, but it has no consistency for what we're so used to. And so we just refer to Windows as Windows, and everybody knows what Windows should look like, and then Windows 8 comes out and says that's not what it's supposed to look like.
Well, Windows Phone users were perfectly happy with it. They were right at home with it. Those 8 people thought it was great.
I saw somebody with a Windows Phone today, and I mean, if he handed it to me and said, could you do something? I'd say, I don't have a clue. Drop it? I don't.
It's like the Geek Challenge. Give somebody a Windows Phone and say, check your mail. You know, if they can do it, then you know they're a real geek.
That's right. You're hired.
That's the interview process.
Quick, configure SMTP on this. Go!
How do I turn it on?
Having that touch interface, I'm guessing you could probably make sense of it fairly quickly. But I mean, it's, you know, to say make it look like Windows, I think that's a very fair statement. It's like, you know, when you get into a car, you expect there to be a steering wheel in front of you, and you expect certain things at certain places. You know, 30 years ago, you'd get into a Saab, and it's like, well, where do I put the key? You know, you'd look for 20 minutes, and you realize it was, you know, where the parking brake should be. And, you know, I think it's fair. I think it's a fair statement. Make it look like Windows. You expect to be able to do certain things only because they trained us to do it for the last 30 years. I mean, you expect.
Yeah, I mean, people make fun of the fact that you have to click start to shut down. So Microsoft made it so you had to go to the control panel to shut down, because that's better. Because our operating system is so good, you never want to turn it off. So we'll hide the shutdown button through 7 layers of abstraction, because clearly nobody would ever want to turn this thing off.
Right. Well, I don't.
I'm not bitter, really.
Seems to me like you can't do much to it as far as updating without restarting it. So, you can only restart if it prompts you to restart.
Well, that's like going back to Windows NT. I mean, I've been around long enough to remember when changing IP addresses required a reboot. And, you know, and now we're going back to that. That's the wrong direction, Microsoft.
Yep.
Hey, on Linux, I can install a new kernel without a reboot. Really? Why is this so hard?
I think we're just... We've been trained, and we've told, and we've gotten to the point where it's kind of redundant. I mean, even today, I had a client call me. Their scanner wouldn't scan to email. And I said, did you turn off the scanner and turn it back on? And they called me back, and they said, I turned off the scanner and turned it back on, and then I even rebooted my computer. Like, we're so used to just, can you turn it off and on again? And that's hopefully someday we won't have to do that, because I'm with you, Mark. I run Linux on my laptop. That's my primary operating system. And there's so many things that I do on it that the only time I really need to shut it down is when I'm going to walk out of that door behind me. Other than that, it just sits up and runs, and I can install kernels and update and install and remove and reconfig, and I never have to turn the thing off.
I never like telling people that, but it's like, it's such an easy thing to do, and it tends to solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, the reality is it fixes more than it doesn't. I mean, we had a problem, multi-million-dollar data center, and, you know, thousands of some of the best people in the world working on it, and the end result was rebooted a Windows server and started working. You know, but that's not what the press release said, but that's what happened.
Right. Well, I got a tweet from my friend today. He's on vacation, and he says stood 45 minutes in line for, he's at an amusement park. I don't know where. He says stood 45 minutes in line at an amusement park. Just, he was almost there. The ride shut down. He said 5 minutes later, a tech came over, rebooted it, like power cycled the ride, and it came back up.
And it made the window startup sound.
I have to see if I still have the tweet from him. The tweet from him, but yeah, he's just like,
and there was a grassy green hill with clouds.
Yeah, he's just like, this is. I mean, and he's a network administrator, or he's a developer in Linux, and this is what he. I mean, that's what he does is Linux all the time, and he just kind of shook his head.
It was like cycle to write.
I mean, have you ever been up to a gas pump with a blue screen of death on it? You know, I've seen it.
Oh yeah, or the zoo, or yeah, an ATM. That's always fun.
Yeah, ATMs with a blue screen, that makes you feel comfortable, doesn't it?
Just walk away. Now, Mark, you have used, if I believe I've heard you correctly, you have used Fog before.
Yes, indeed.
Now you're a big Fog guy, right?
I'm fan number one. Yes,
fan number one. See, and I like Clonezilla. I tried using Fog, never really got into it, but I do use Clonezilla all the time. So I came across a website just the other day. That is five awesome open source cloning softwares. And it has things like Clonezilla, Redo Backup, Fog, Mondo Rescue, and then it just says DD and Friends.
Well, so, Clonezilla and Fog are very different applications. Fog is if you want a Clonezilla 500 machines.
Right, right. And you can, and I know you can, set up so Clonezilla will wait, like the old Ghost, where you can set it so you just say, okay, I'm going to clone 10 images. Once the 10th image connects, or once the 10th, you know, computer connects, go ahead and start the image.
Yeah, multicasting.
And I'm going to look into that a little more, because I have 30 computers I need to image this weekend. So I'm going to look into that, because I've just used Clonezilla where I just go from site to site, you know, go from one. And then I have it on a Pixieboot server. And so it loads Clonezilla via that way. So I don't have to go around with a thumb disk or a CD-ROM.
See, what you could do with Fog, I'm going to be a Fog apologist here.
No, please.
You could set up a Fog server at each location as a storage node, and then set up a central command and control node at your office and dictate over the internet to those storage nodes to deploy images, all from one control panel.
Does it have to be internally, or can it run externally as well?
I have done it over the internet through an SSL before.
Wow. I probably need to go back into it. There's only one site I really do a lot of re-imaging, and it's at a school. I probably need to look into it. It's only one school, so it's not, you know, it's, I'm not going across multiple sites, but I've thought about maybe looking at it a little bit more. The first time I worked on it, I had a hard time with it.
When I was working in schools, we had a 30-minute rule. I or my techs will spend 30 minutes trying to fix what you broke. After that, Fog comes into play. You know, we just wielded the big hammer. You get 30 minutes of my time because you wanted to install Bonesy Buddies. After that, it's just reimaged.
Punch the monkey.
Yeah.
Well, that is a great role in, you know, to use, because there's only this is funny, because I just listened to you guys earlier today where you talked about, you know, you only have so many. That was my statement was, you only have so many resources that you can throw out at that. Where humans are humans, humans are not resources. And your quote was, "Water's a resource, humans are not."
Yes.
it's like where I work. If you can't fix it in a couple minutes. I work in Maryland, but our IT department is in Chicago or Mason, Michigan. So, all right, FedEx it. We'll have to re-image it. FedEx it, re-image it. Instead of sending it down to me, or because I'm not an IT guy, it's not my position. But
so I wanted to throw that out there. So, Mark, one of the things that I realized that we, you know, I was thinking earlier that we hadn't done is we said, I told everybody, your Element OP. You have a podcast called Everyday Linux. But I didn't ask you anything about the podcast. Like, everybody's just supposed to know what it's about. So what is Everyday Linux?
Everyday Linux is the only Linux show on the internet that's not about Linux. We put that right up front. It's not a show about Linux. It's about life in the context of Linux. It's three guys. It's me, it's Seth, it's Chris, also known as the GUI kid in the command line godfather. And they sort of, they're the yin and yang. They bring balance to the force. And I'm the guy in the middle just making trouble. So that's essentially my job, chief troublemaker. But we talk about it's this show, just with a different name. So it's the show is about us. It's about me, and it's about Seth, and it's about Chris, and we all happen to like Linux and use Linux. So we talk about the idea is the everyday Linux user, the guy who uses, who's not the 10th level goober geek, who doesn't have a beard coming straight out of his neck. He doesn't care about kernel updates. Right? The average person doesn't. There are people who do, and there are podcasts for them. Great. We're a show for people who just are regular folks who want to figure out if or how they could incorporate Linux in their lives. So, we get lots of hate mail from people who say, we hate Linux and we love Windows, because it's the only Linux show I know of that doesn't hate Windows. Windows is good. I get in trouble for saying that. It's a good OS. It's been around for 25 years. It's solid. It works. And I did an experiment. It's probably way more than you wanted to ask, but you never give a guy with a big mic a chance to talk, because that's what's going to happen. But I did an experiment. I called the Ubuntu experiment, and I blogged about it. It's like 8 or 10 years ago, where I jumped totally into Ubuntu Linux at the time. That was the big thing. And I, for 6 months, I didn't touch a Windows box except when I had to at work. And so I just told myself, if I'm gonna do this thing, I'm gonna do it right. And at the end of 6 months, I realized it's a lateral move. I didn't gain a thing from moving to Linux. In the final analysis, I gained some things. I lost some other things. In the end, pick what you like, pick what works for you, and go with it. And a lot of Linux shows or open source shows like to talk about the fact that Linux is free. Windows is free. Nobody pays for Windows. They buy a machine that has Windows on it. It's free. So let's just throw that out. And so now you're left with, does it do what I need it to do? Does it do Netflix? No, not really. So if you're a big Netflix guy, Linux probably isn't for you. No other Linux show on the internet would say that. So that's what we are. We're the un-show. We're like Sprite was the un-Cola or 7-Up. We're the un-Linux show.
Well, you guys, one of the things about your show and Tim and I and or Tim, Mitch, I and Fred, we've all kind of met kind of along the way on this path and within the Podnuts. But you, Chris, and Seth have known each other for so long, way before Element, way before Everyday Linux, that when you guys get together, it's just like you guys are just meeting together on a Sunday just to check in. How's the family? How are the kids? What's going on? How much barbecue are you having this week? What are you going to do over the summer? Like, you guys just sit down and early on when I started listening to you guys, I had a road trip and I listened to Everyday Linux for 12 hours straight.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize to you in person for that?
No, and I did it on purpose because I was like, this is fun. This is great. And I just, next. And I just kind of, I caught up and I wrote you an email early on and I said, I listened to you guys for 12 hours straight in a road trip. And I think you said that too. You're like, I'm sorry.
Why would you do? You hate yourself. Well, that's a form of self-punishment. And no, I think you need to seek counseling.
It's a compliment because I want you to know that your show is very much put it on, sit down, and just like you're just talking with guys about technology and movies and bacon. And coffee and, just it's called Everyday Linux. And you guys apologize when you talk too much about Linux. So
yeah.
Really, listeners of Geeksters, if you have never listened to Element, I know it's Element OP Productions, but if you've never listened to Everyday Linux, give it a shot because it is funny and you guys talk about everything under the sun.
Yeah, the emphasis is on the everyday and not so much on the Linux.
Right.
We could just call the show Everyday. But just a correction there. I love that you think that's true, but I actually have never met Chris in person. I only know him through the podcast. He was a listener to our initial Tightwad Tech show, and he was a guy in the chat room frequently, and we knew he was a Linux guy. So we did an episode of the Tightwad Tech called Everyday Linux, and Chris came on and was our guest. And so that was 3 years ago or so. And so we liked it so much, we decided to spin off a show out of that. So Chris, I would call him my brother. I consider him one of my best friends, but I've actually never shared the same roof with him.
That's amazing.
Now, Seth, I've seen Seth in his boxer, so that's a whole different story. I've known Seth since high school.
What was that, Tim?
Yeah, that's the last thing you'll think about when you lay down to go to bed tonight. You're welcome.
Windows 9.
Go to your happy place, Tim. Go to your happy place.
Threshold.
But it's true. You can really make some really good relationships because of this, because of technology. I mean, we got to meet each other, and it was it's one of the best times of
my life. It was one of the best drives through a parking garage I've ever had.
OLF last year. That was great. I mean, I had met Dore before. And Fred several times.
Well, yeah, Door to Door Geek, the imprimatur of Podnuts now. I feel the same way about him. He's a guy I consider a good friend. I've never met him. I just know him through this stuff, through Podnuts. And, when you listen to a guy talk every week, you feel like you know him. And I hope that people feel that way about me. I hope there are people out there that consider me a friend that I've never met. And that's the beauty of podcasting. I'm in your head right now. Right. And nobody else gets to do that. Everybody, even, even your wife is distant from you by several inches. I am in your head, literally between your ears. And that's an intimate thing. And I certainly, I don't take it lightly.
My wife lets me know that, though. Oh, my. It could be a bad thing.
I've never thought of it that way. But now I have more power.
Yes. You can command the masses.
I'm going to have my kids start listening to this show because then I can be in their head.
By the way, Mark, I love your intros. Who's ever doing those guitar solos? Oh, they rock.
That stuff, I went on just various Creative Commons music. So I have a website, a portion of our website that tells every show and every intro. And yeah, I'm a guitar nut.
Me too.
So,
But I can't play it, but I have one, but I try to play one at home. But
I play the bass guitar and it's like the worst solo instrument in the world. You can't really sit around the campfire with a bass and sing Kumbaya. It doesn't work that way.
You can sing it. But I remember that episode. It was on your the Otter podcast. Steve C would always say you don't need to intro more than like 7 seconds, and there was a little controversy there.
Yeah, my intros are all 30 seconds or more. Steve's like, nobody comes to your show to listen to music. They want to get, a little intro, a little bump, and then straight to you. And I'm totally the other way. We're going to set the tone.
I might get in trouble for this, but that electronic dance music, it's just not my thing.
Have you taken your Ovaltine yet today?
No, I haven't.
Right. I'm totally getting
That's another one of the themes of our show is not everything is for everyone. So it's okay that you don't like dance music. And it's okay that some people, don't like Linux, and it doesn't bother me. I'm going to get preachy here. I'm going to step onto my soapbox as I like to do, but people get this mindset of if you like the same things I do, you have to like everything that I do in the same way that I do. And I don't think Steve minds that you don't like electronic dance music.
I don't think I ever told him. He does play guitar. He plays guitar well. But all I hear is mostly dance music with his stuff.
I'm totally getting a bumper sticker that says a little intro, a little bump, and straight to you.
Well, that sounds dirty when you say it like that.
Wait, that should be the title. A little intro and a little bump.
As long as you don't say Mitch hates.
Maybe that should be it. Mitch hates dance music. Oh, so many titles. Maybe I have to save them up. Save them up. One more I found. A couple more things that I came across this week. A site called GetVoIP, GetVoIP. I've never heard of this site, but they released the top 9 most secure remote PC access software of 2014. And coming in at number 3, it was Screen Connect, which I didn't even think about that one. Screen Connect is, listeners may have known, that's my remote software of choice. It runs on a $5 a month DigitalOcean box, and it just works. It works great. I've had no issues with it. I called them this last week because I had an issue with my when you went to my site and you clicked the join button, a lot of my clients were saying, I don't see the join button because you can create a session. And it's because the join button was gray and the word join was white. And so you really couldn't tell that. So I got a hold of their techs and they sat down with me and he jumped in. He used Screen Connect, jumped on my computer. I downloaded some CSS files. He modified some CSS files and we got it up and running. Now it's white background, black text. And I asked him about this. I said, hey, do you guys see this? And they said, oh, yes, we've seen that. But it looks like log me in followed by BombGar. And I've never heard of BombGar, but it says it's integration with Radius compliant solutions. So that will increase their security because now you're authenticating probably against some kind of an Active Directory server. So I don't know if that can be used externally without a VPN solution. So, but log me in. We've heard of that. BombGar, Screen Connect, Go to My PC, Net Support, and TeamViewer. And the last three were ISL Online, Splashtop, and Mikogo. Mikogo?
Yeah.
I've heard of that one. I haven't heard of Splashtop or ISL Online. So now they tested things like this wasn't the most used, the most user-friendly. This wasn't the best. It was the most secure. So they tested data level encryption, multi-level authentication, IP filtering, inactivity timeout, excuse me, desktop access notifications, complex password requirements, things like that. So the one thing that why Screen Connect got 9 out of 10 as opposed to 10 out of 10 is that it doesn't have an expiring or one-time passcode. So once you connect to a user, the connection goes on until I stop the connection or they stop the connection. I can't set a 30-minute session, and then after 30 minutes, it just automatically disconnects. But of all of the things not to pass on, it says a one-time passcode, but I think you can set up a one-time passcode. So, but it's been we've talked about remote support tools here many times, and I have used Screen Connect, and it's my favorite.
If Mark weighs in on remote software.
You know, I'm pretty old school, VNC through an SSL tunnel. That's what the way I do it. When I was in the enterprise environment, when I was at the school there, we used a tool called iTalk, which is not good for remote support, over the internet, but it's great for LAN support, and it's an excellent open source tool that is cross platform Mac, Windows, and Linux, and it does gives you you could set up, say, a classroom in my scenario. There'd be 30 computers in there. I could see 30 thumbnails of what was going on, pick any one of those, control it. And my favorite feature was what I call the pay attention, or may I have your attention please button. You push that and all the screens go blank. But
please,
for may just attention, you know, please. Just remote, yeah, may I have your attention please. For just plain old remote support, I'm still a VNC guy.
Yeah, I needed something that, because since I run Linux, I needed something to be able to connect to Mac and Windows. And it also supports phones as well. And so I can connect to, I don't know if it supports iOS at this time. I do know that it supports Android phones. I've Josh Williams, Knucklehead Tech, he has been using it. He's using it internally. They were testing out, and he really likes it as well. So we'll see with them. But I've had very little issues with them. I've gotten a hold of their sales team, and their sales team has given me high level tech support when I wasn't expecting that at all. You can call in and actually talk to
you. You're remoted to people's phones and fix them too, huh?
No, I don't normally. I can do it. I don't do it very much.
But what you need to figure out how to do is fix a broken screen by remote, and you'll be a millionaire then.
That would be amazing.
I don't even know where to begin with that one. Like, I don't have a clue. I can't even come up with, like, oh, they just need to do this. I'm not that smart. So if somebody could do that remotely, that would be great. Like sending glass through the cable.
That's really what the Google Glass project was. But when they couldn't make that work, they came out with the good torquey glasses.
That's right.
That's what you do. You have the user sit there and they just apply some like electrodes to their hands, and then you just remotely control their hands as they change it out.
There you go.
Oh, like taking over their body?
Exactly. I'm sure they would have a problem with that.
Well, you know, the first thing I think of is stop hitting yourself. Why are you hitting yourself? Stop hitting yourself. I just, maybe it's because I have a teenager kid. I don't know. But that's the first thing that came to my mind was like people just smacking themselves.
I wear a tinfoil hat so that they can't do that.
And we use on the show, I don't know if you guys saw this today, BitTorrent Sync updated to version 1.4 today. And with this new version, it has a huge GUI interface change. Makes it a lot easier to share files, share data. It's not the, and I just went on my Windows Box prior to coming on the show, is that my Windows Box doesn't have the update yet. So it's a brand new interface, brand new look, a lot more one click. This is what this does, and this is what this does. It doesn't have the kind of the technology walkthrough that we've kind of all experienced on how to try to use BitTorrent Sync. It's very much, oh, you want to share a document like CD burners now. Do you want to have data? Do you want to have music? Do you want to have media? It has kind of the icons that look like that. That's what the new BitTorrent Sync does. So two articles came from PC World. One called Hands-on Sweeping BitTorrent Sync Update Streamlines Cloudless File Sharing. Another one called Three Ways to Use BitTorrent Sync to Share Your Files Without the Cloud. And so those are just two articles I wanted to bring, both from PC World. But with the new BitTorrent Sync update today, I wanted to share those out.
Any change in the GUI would be huge because there's virtually none.
Yes.
I mean, it's almost shocking after I installed it how little GUI there was. I mean, it's actually refreshing in some ways, but I mean, any adjustment would be...
Mark, have you used or played with BitTorrent Sync?
No.
So the... it's even though it's BitTorrent Sync and everybody thinks, well, it must be torrenting, it's by the same people. But what they did is they came across with a point-to-point sharing application. So I can...
It's sort of CrashPlan-ish, right?
Well, CrashPlan's backup, but this is more... But yes. Yes. So it's peer-to-peer. So I can... So what I do is I create a folder and I share it and I put it on my system and I put it wherever I want to put it. And then you create a folder and you put it on your system wherever you want to put it. And I can give you a couple things. I can give you a one-time key. I can give you like a 30-day key, or I can give you a full admin key. And the key is automatically generated. It's this super long, I don't know, I think it's 20 characters, something like that. I give you the key, and depending on the key is what you get access. Now, when you put that key on your system, our data starts to synchronize. And that's how we do our audio for Geeksters, is that when we're all done recording the show, we put it into one folder, and then Dor has the key as well, and then the data automatically synchronizes with his computer. Okay? So BitTorrent Sync now will do point-to-point syncing. You can make it faster if you wanted to. I know that you can open up some firewalls. You don't need to. And if for whatever reason I can't do a direct tunnel to you, for whatever reason, maybe a network is down or something like that somewhere along the way, it will pass through the BitTorrent Sync servers. But the catch is that the data is completely encrypted. As soon as it leaves my system and it goes to your system, the data is completely encrypted. And so it's not readable. Even if it passes through their servers, they're just using it as a transport layer over port 80 to get down to you. But if you give admin rights, then anybody can delete it. And so there's no backup. So it can be used CrashPlan-ish to have a backup, but it's, you know.
Yeah, so it's sort of a combination of CrashPlan and Dropbox and BitLocker.
Yeah. It works on Windows and Linux. It works on Android phones. So you can BitTorrent Sync, say, your pictures. You know, so this is something that I have here. So I have BitTorrent Sync on my computers for the Geeksters, and then Dor has it, and Tim and Mitch have it. We all synchronize our data together, so we all see each other's data. Well, then all that data also sits on my NAS. Well, then my NAS has CrashPlan on it, so all that data then gets backed up externally as well. You could do it on your phone.
Yeah, I'm a big Dropbox guy. It does all of that without the encryption.
Right.
So I just don't put anything in Dropbox I care about.
Right. So it's only been out a year now, and I think there's something along the, one of the articles said that they have 10,000 viewers. Let me see what it says. It was amazing how much data they have done. What did they say here? 10 million installs and 80 petabytes of data transferred. So
it's working well for us, that's for sure.
Yeah. So if anybody's definitely looking for, I mean, this is a very, well, it's free, so you could do this as your own backup solution if you have a computer offsite. You know, maybe you want to set it up at your parents' house. You could set up this and then back all the data up to them. Now, of course, if that only protects you if your data gets lost on your side, it doesn't protect you if the data gets lost on both sides, because if somebody actually goes in and deletes it. But I guess you could do a read-only. Synchronize the data on to your, say, your parents, and then do read-only, so they couldn't modify anything.
So from the end user perspective, you don't see the encryption, right? You're just looking at an MP3 file. Yep. It's encrypted in transit and decrypted when stored on your drive.
Correct. And, you know, and you can sync anything with anybody. It doesn't matter what it is. I've synced pictures. We've synced, you know, the media for this. We've synced synced documents or, you know, anything you want to sync.
Last week I set it up wrong and it synced up entire user profile, you know, along with everything else.
That's right.
That was funny.
What's this populating here? I'm seeing your whole C drive.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And so when one person deletes it, it's deleted everywhere?
Yes. If you have admin rights to do that. So that's why you don't want to set up BitTorrent Sync to sync your user directory.
Right.
So it is a little more, it seems like it does have a little more setup than Dropbox, because Dropbox, you know, isolates itself just because it's its own application. The Windows GUI isolates itself because of its own application, and it really walks you through. The Linux one, not so much. You have to do a little more, like you gotta set up your folder ahead of time and things like that. But, you don't have to set the folders don't need to be set up exactly the same, just because, you know, I have a folder under my user directory called BT Sync. It doesn't mean you have to have that same folder. You can choose where you want the data to go specifically for your machine, and I can choose the data to go. It's just the keys have to match, and that's what synchronizes the folder. Currently,
so is there a key directory anywhere, or do I have to send you my key? How do I advertise that I've got files I want to give to you?
You have to send out the key or the QR code. They have a QR code, so if you want to do it on your phone, you can do it that way as well. But yes, if you want to share something with us, you would create the directory, and then you would send us the key depending on what type of access you would like us to have.
Is the key automatically generated? Or?
Yeah, the key gets automatically generated when you create the directory. You ask it for a key, or you tell it, you know, within the app, you say, I want to just give read-only access, or I want a full administrative access, and it says, here's your key. Then you can, you know, take a picture and fax it, send it, whatever. You know, you probably don't, you know, you would do it the same way you would probably do with any other kind of a second factor authentication or something. But then, or you just read it online, or, you know, read it out to the person. But then, yes, then I would get the key. It would match. Now I would start syncing, you know, what you have, or if we have the rights, then I could throw a folder in there and you would end up seeing the syncing. It only syncs currently. It only syncs folders. It does not sync files individually. So you can create a top level folder and it'll sync everything in that, but I can't be within that folder just one document.
So presumably then I could also have a public write only key that anybody could send to me and I could, but not, they couldn't delete it.
Correct. Now, yeah, like in my BitSync folder, I have different folders inside of there, and each one of those folders has different keys to go to different people or to do certain things. So it's not one key for everything. It's as many keys as you want, depending on who you want. And you know, maybe I've got a folder on my system that I'm not sharing with Tim and Mitch, but I may be sharing it with my NAS just so I can put data in there and it automatically gets backed up for me.
And this sounds like the sort of thing that in time will just be built.
Yeah. I think you said built in. So I just wanted to bring that up, that BitTorrent Sync did have an update on it. Check it out. My Windows GUI has not updated. I had an update on Linux, but it was not a BitTorrent Sync.
Last week. I remember when we did the show when I first turned it on.
Did it upgrade to 1.4?
I don't remember what it was, but I don't think anything changed. I didn't notice any drastic change.
If you look at the link, it's a drastic GUI change.
I'll look at it tonight. I mean, yeah, you see if it... only time I turn that computer on, because I have, it's the only PC I have that my laptop with BitTorrent Sync, and I just do it to move the file over there from this PC.
So have you guys been working on anything else this week?
Yeah. You know, I've got a computer here. Have you ever run SpinRite, Martin? I know you run SpinRite.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever run SpinRite and getting the words locks up, basically, and you've gotten the overflow?
Is the SpinRite's locking up, or
basically SpinRite encounters an error and it says basically a SpinRite crash, vision overflow error.
Oh,
apparently this is very common, and I've never run into it. However, I'm usually running SpinRite in it's a pretty controlled environment. I usually have a box just for doing this sort of thing. I pull the drive, you know, stick it in there and run it. And so this is a known environment. I know, you know, I've never had a problem, so I've never seen this, but I just so happened. I thought, well, I'm going to try and run it on the machine itself. and
yeah.
So it's a couple years old HP. I have to go in and change it, from CI to settings. I have to make those changes just to get it to run. But then once it's running, it's all happy until it gets to what seems to be roughly the same point, and I get the error message where it's a Spinrise crashed, record this error information. And so I'm starting to think that it's not a so much a problem with the drive itself, but there's something else going on. Either it doesn't like the large drive, or there's some I'm just starting to research it here. Some people say it has something to do with the large drive, or that it's not actually a Spinrite issue, but there perhaps is an issue with the the emulator that he used,
The DOS
simulator. Perhaps the issue is there that if you run Spinrite, like if you cobble together a different booting drive, not using that emulator and having success with that, and then somebody else said, hey, it's just a problem with the actual the hardware itself. Pull it out, use on a different machine, it was fine. So I was just wondering if you run into that. It was the first I'd seen it. But initially I thought, oh gosh, what's going on with this drive, with this hard drive itself? I'm thinking that there's something else somewhere.
Well, I have run into that issue before, now you mentioned it, and I just pulled it out and put it in another drive, in another physical computer, and it worked just fine. So that's what I would do. And if nothing else, you could always just contact GRC. He is coming out. Steve Gibson is coming out with another version of Spinrite that's going to be fixing a whole lot of issues. And I think this version 6.1 has been out for years now. So,
well, it doesn't. It's apparently not a new issue. I'm getting search results that are years old. And
yeah,
and actually, there's all four from a lot of people for years. Apparently, as I'm reading through this, for come on, help us out, Steve. So
well, and he's working on that. If you listen to any of his, when he's on Security Now, he's mentioned that he's working on it right now, and it should be out very soon.
Talk is cheap, Steve. Come on, man.
He's got to get Squirrel first.
Yes, Squirrel, and yeah.
Sorry about that, guys. My power went out. There's a big storm going through here. So, I was saying something really, really important, and you missed it. It was life-changing, and it's gone. I'm sorry.
So that means your recording machine went out too then, right?
It'll get to door in two chunks, so it's all right, though.
Cool. Well, we're just checking. I asked if they had come across any other things they wanted to talk about, and Tim mentioned Spinrite. Having some Spinrite.
I love Spinrite.
I've only used it once.
Like most people.
It's still running. For 3 years now, still been checking that drive. It's still running.
Like most people, I discovered Spinrite in a time of need when a hard drive crashed, and since then I have used it hundreds of times. Bought a site license for where I worked, and I've never thrown anything at it that it couldn't fix.
Wow.
I've given up before Spinrite's given up.
Yes.
So I had a computer, I think the longest I've ever waited was 2.5 weeks, and I said no. And I've come across computers that can you pull data off, and it's got a clicking sound, and Spinrite kicks. Spinrite will see the drive, it kicks over, it starts doing its smart technology. It's just like, how long can really, what's the how long should I wait before I tell them? How important is this data to get back to you? Because most of the time it's like, well, if you can get it back, that'd be great. We have a backup, but yeah, I like that data. So.
Oh, I misspoke. It's not true that I've never thrown anything out of the Spinrite couldn't handle. There was one time where the drive itself had a big scratch down it. Once I figured it wasn't ever going to work again, I took it apart and the platter had been scratched. It's like, okay, I don't blame Spinrite for that one.
Right. All right, guys. Well, anything else that you want to mention, Mark? Great having you on the show, coming on and talking about Element OP and what you guys do and Everyday Linux.
It's happy to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
And more bacon.
I have a question. Mark, where did you come up with Element OP, if you don't mind me asking?
Say the alphabet. Maybe.
Yeah. All
right. Yeah. It's just a play on words. I'm the only one who gets the joke, and that's okay. I'm fine with that.
I was thinking of the Andy Griffith show.
Yeah, well, exactly. My original logo, and we still used it for the show we had for a while called The Periodic Table, was a periodic table of elements with Opie's head where oxygen should be. Yeah, it was Element Opie. But I may or may not have been contacted and asked not to use that anymore. and I may or may not have made the decision not to use that anymore. But yeah, it's just it's a memorable thing that everybody misspells. And I realized that it was more important that it be catchy than mean something. So Element OP, it is.
I like it. I can't stop saying it. That's how much I like it.
ElementOP.com.
Well, that's where we know you can. We can find you, Chris, and Seth. ElementOP.com. And when is Everyday Linux? When do you have a live show, or is it just audio only?
We record Sunday nights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. We just changed that. And you know, we typically have a small, but vocal audience, that's also all, I'm sure as these are as well, they're on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel, just search Mark Cockrell on YouTube and they're all there. But the big show, the primary audience is audio. So I clean up the audio and release it every, Wednesday at midnight server time.
Very nice. That's why.
So when I'm finishing here, I've got to go upstairs and edit a podcast.
Oh,
well, it comes out tonight.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Well, we'll let you go. Mitch, if people want to get a hold of us, send us a voicemail, a text, an email. Well, maybe not text. We'd send you a text. Well, give me your number.
If they want to email us, they can do that at geeksersofpodnuts.com or send us a voicemail at 7076podnut at 707-676-3688. I think I said that right.
I think you did.
Yeah.
Maybe we've had a whole lot of people trying to get a hold of us and nobody's getting through.
Since I'm not able to remember it, I'm looking at it right now. So.
There's some lady in Missouri who's like, why do these people keep calling me with tech questions?
Mitch, we can always tell when you've had your geritol.
It's poor not Mitch. Working too much lately.
Poor Mitch. Tim, if people want to get a hold of you.
Tim Bauermeister on the G+. Find me there.
Find you there. I'm Martin Obando at ObandoComputing.com. You can email me at Martin@ObandoComputing.com. I want to thank our other sponsor that we've had, Nick Shaw. He just came out with a new reporting feature today on D7.2. Check that out at FoolishIT.com. Guys, have a great week, and don't forget to be gruntled. We'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
Be gruntled. I love that.
D7.2 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.